friends, regular listeners, and newcomers to the program. This is Red Ice Creations Radio. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and we are recording from the west coast of Sweden. You can hear us every Thursday and Sunday through our website, redicecreations.com. You can follow along in our news section, check out our forum, and for you guys who want to have full access to Red Ice Creations Radio, don't miss out on our subscriber section. All information on how to sign up is available on redicecreations.com. Today we have an interesting program lined up for you. We have author and researcher Gene Matlock with us, who's written a lot about ancient civilizations, history and the origins of religion, and the progenitors, I guess, of civilization. And Gene is behind a number of books, and let me read a few titles here. Jesus and Moses are buried in India, and India once ruled Americas. What Strange Mysteries Unites the Turkish Nations, India, Catholicism, and Mexico, a concise but detailed history of things divine and earthly. Also, the last Atlantis book you'll ever read, ever have to read, The Atlantis Mexico India, and Christianity, Mankind's First Worldwide Religion, and he has a lot more titles out there, and maybe we can mention a few more of those later on. Gene also has a new book coming out in the latter part of August called Reaching for God, A Valid Science, and we're going to talk a little bit about that today also. And I also hope to dive further into his work and research that connects India, Turkey and Mexico. What's the root of these civilizations, and what is the connection between these? Fascinating material to talk about today. And the website, I guess, that you should take a look at right away for much more of Gene's writing is viewzone.com. That's ViewZone magazine. The address again is viewzone.com, one word. And Gene has a lot of articles up there. The ViewZone magazine has published a lot of his articles throughout the years. And I'll also have that website linked up from our info page so people can find it easily. So with that, let's say welcome to the program, Mr. Matlock. Thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm glad to be here.
Excellent. Nice to have you. Again, thanks for coming on. You know, there's lots to talk about today. You have written on a lot of different subjects and a wide variety, and a thread that seems to kind of run through it all seems to be about the progenitors of civilizations. But let me begin to ask you, Gene, how long have you been interested in these subjects, and when did you first begin to write about it?
Well, I first started this in late 1970s. I got very concerned about what's taking place between Israel and the Mohammedans, and what's going on over there in Palestine. So I started doing research. And I started out just to find out just where the Jews came from, what Judaism really was. And I ended up 20 years later with a book that, here it is right here. Excuse me to the audience for being a little nervous. I'm not used to this.
No problem, Gene. I know it's your first time on radio, and we're proud to have you. So it's very, very nice. Go ahead, Gene.
Yes, this book is called Jesus and Moses are buried in India, birthplace of Abraham and the Hebrews. Now, when I finished that book, well, I was convinced that I had found out all I could about Jesus. Mm-hmm. And I was convinced also at the time I was what you would call an agnostic. I didn't really believe that Jesus really died on the cross. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote this book, and I thought that I had found out everything I could find. Mm-hmm. I kept finding out more and more and more. And then I came to the conclusion, after finding out more, that Jesus really did do that. He really died on the cross. Hmm. So I backed up a bit. And then a woman named Suzanne Olson, who had bought this book, mm-hmm. she got interested, and she decided that she would go off to India and find out for herself. And she went, wanting to stay there just a few weeks. And she went over there and ended up staying several years. Hmm. And I was convinced, you know, that Jesus is buried over in Kashmir after writing my book. Mm-hmm. And then, but when I wrote the book, as I said, I thought that he had just escaped from the cross and died over there. I didn't know that he had really died on the cross.
Mm.
And so I was 100% convinced that Jesus had was buried over there. And when she went over there and stayed several years,
mm-hmm.
and ended up with her book, Jesus in Kashmir, The Lost Tomb.
Ah,
well, yeah. And after reading her book, I'm 200% now.
Yeah, definitely. This is interesting. What in the first place led you to this direction in Kashmir and so forth? How did was there a piece of evidence that came about during your research, or was there a particular book?
Well, I started reading about crucified saviors and all over the world,
mm-hmm.
and I became convinced that this really does happen, except that we human beings, you know, that we're not advanced enough in our minds to find out just why this has to be so.
Hmm.
So I started out being an agnostic, and ended up perhaps believing in Jesus even more than anybody,
hmm.
And that it really happened, and so I've discovered a lot of things about this, and this Jesus and Moses book,
hmm.
it led into more things, and I even found out, and I even today, if you want me to, I will even give proof
mm-hmm.
that even Hitler would not be able to deny that the Jews are the chosen people.
Hmm.
Now I'm not Jewish, and I'm not a Mormon or very religious.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Catholic, and,
sure.
But I ended up realizing that the Jews are the chosen people, and I have proof of it.
That's interesting.
Of course, they're going to have to share that fame as the chosen people with some tribal groups in India, that's for sure.
Okay, this is very interesting. Why not? You know, we can talk a little bit about that maybe. What makes the Jews the chosen people?
Okay, let me see. I have notes here, and I have some folders, and I am nervous. So when I get this, so I sort of shaking a little bit when I open this. Well,
no problem. We have all the time in the world, and we can just relax and have a nice discussion.
I'm not a young guy. I'm an older man, about 80 years old.
And, yeah.
and,
yes, sir. It's no problem at all. Yeah.
Let me see here. Yeah, here we go.
Mm.
Jesus says the chosen people. Okay. This is in my new book.
Okay,
And I just cut that part out to read to you, and it's going to be an article in View Zone also.
Okay, excellent.
Shall I start out reading it to you?
Yeah, definitely. Read a little about it, and we can talk about it, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, as you know, in Genesis, we get to Noah, and that's after the flood, and the people started degenerating, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And these people were called Christias or Christianes.
Mm-hmm.
And there were several tribes of them. And the reason why they call themselves Christus or Christianis is because they worshipped a sun god, which was in the form of an eagle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it went, according, you know, to their mythology, this mythological eagle would fly from east to west every day.
Mm-hmm.
And but they started to degenerate. They lived for hundreds of years. We call them Hyperboreans.
Hmm.
You've heard of the Hyperboreans.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Yeah, and so they start to generate in their conduct, you know. So suddenly, some divine forces came to Earth to help them out.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bible mentions this. The Bible says, when men began to increase on Earth and daughters were born to them, the divine beings saw how beautiful the daughters of men were, and took wives from among those that pleased them.
Mm.
The Lord said, my breath shall not abide in man forever, since he too is flesh. Let the days allotted him be 120 years. It was then, and later too, that the Nephilim appeared on earth, when the divine beings cohabited with the daughters of men, who bore them offspring. They were heroes of old, the men of renown. That's in Genesis, you know.
Yeah.
Now, most people can't understand why this passage was placed in Genesis and who the Nephilim were.
Yeah.
The Nephilim descended to earth to plant the seeds of God-men who would, from time to time, reincarnate to lead man on the right path. Now, the word Nephilim has its equivalent both in Sanskrit and Greek. It's Sanskrit. Now, Arnu, Arna, means ship, boat, knowledge, certainty. The descendancy from Noah or Lord Krishna, God Shiva, Buddha, or Noah. And the word in Sanskrit, Navilin, means the starship, the constellation ship. Now, in Greek, Nephilim equals Nephilim, meaning the five races of Noah, or Nu. And these five races are called Yadu, Turvasa, Druyus, Anu, and Puru. Now, they were the original Christayas, and who worshipped that eagle. Now, the only one that I'll deal with in this today are the Yadu and their companions, the Yadavas. Yadava is a contraction of Yadu plus Deva, meaning the Yadu demigods. It was through them that Lord Krishna, God Shiva, and Buddha came to earth to save mankind from time to time as follows. And here I have the list here. We start out with the Nephilim or the Navilim. And from there we go to Noah, which they also in India call Manu. And then we get to the son of Noah, Yayati or Japheti. We call in the Bible Japhet. And then from Japhet or Yayati, you go to Yadu. And from Yadu, you go to Yadava. And from Yadava, the Jews, because actually the Yehuda, they are actually the Yadavas. Here in the United States, you know, we see them, they have motels and small businesses. They're the Yadavas.
Okay.
So, you stop me whenever you want me.
Okay. Yeah, explain a little bit about that, because I didn't follow you on the last note there when you spoke about these.
Well, you see, the people saw that that mankind was degenerating. And evidently there was somebody up in space that didn't like that. So they decided they would come down to Earth and regenerate mankind. But they didn't go to all of the five Aryan races. We call them Aryans, but they were really, you know, Christayas.
Okay.
So, see, these five races were Yadu, Turvasa, Druyus, Anu, and Puru. But he didn't deal with all of those, the Turvasa, the Druyus, or the Anu and Puru, these people. They just dealt with the Yadu.
Okay.
And so the Nephilim, or the Navilim, they bred with the people of Noah, but principally with what we call Japhet or Japheti, and the Hindus call it Yayati. And then there's another tribe of people that spread from the Japhet or the Yayati, and they are called the Yadu. And after the Yadu, they are the Yadava, and after the Yadava, they are the Jews or the Yehuda. And these are the what we would call a sacred race of people or a chosen race of people. And only messiahs can be born from those people that have their genes. This is mentioned even in the Hindu scriptures.
So
Yayati or Japheti or Japhet was at one and the same time Jupiter or Zeus, Vishnu, Lord Krishna, Shiva, and Buddha.
So it's all the same we're talking about here.
Yeah. Actually, in those days, you know, if we went back to those days, days of Apollo and those other gods, we would find that they were just the same that we have today.
So you mentioned the... I mean, there are so many points here that are interesting to talk further about. You mentioned the Aryans, of course. Could we do like this? Could we tie all of this back to the Nephilim? Are these the root people?
They all go back to the Nephilim. And the Navalim, as the Hindus would say.
And according to your research, are these an extraterrestrial race, or where do these guys come from?
Well, this is what now the Greek word Nephilim means. The five of them, you know, like a certain type of animal or something. But in the Hindus call them Navalin. Na means or Nava. Na means Noah. Valin means a starship, like an airship.
Yeah.
From another planet.
So they. Yeah. Go ahead.
So they came down, and they, you know, the Bible just mentions these. They don't mention the whys, but, you know, we more or less guess it. And then they mixed with Noah or Manu.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't mix with all the tribes, though, that was going to produce the Messiahs. Mm-hmm. They just mixed with Yayati or Japheti, and we call it Japhet.
Mm-hmm.
And then their race moved over to Yadu, then Yadava, and last of all, the Jews are the Yehuda.
So are these, the Nephilim in that sense, are these guys, how should I put it, administrators for or of God? Have these guys...
Well, I think they're administrators of the whole universe, because they somehow in ancient India were leaders, but their ancient leaders were called by another name.
Mm-hmm.
Now these people, they had a little bit of a different name. They were called Kudus.
Mm-hmm.
And but the regular leadership caste of the ancient Indians were the Kashi,
mm-hmm.
Kshatriya.
Okay.
You've heard of those?
No, actually I haven't.
That's the leadership caste, but this spiritual caste were called the Christus, or the Christayas,
mm-hmm.
Kudus. And you know, Jesus himself was a Kudus. They called him David Kudus, or he was the son of David. Now, the word David in Sanskrit means knowledge of God Shiva.
Hmm, really?
And then Quraysh was the ancient leadership tribe of the Middle East. Even Muhammad was a Kudus himself.
Huh. Okay.
So they went down and they bred. Now they didn't just blend their bodies into those of the people there. They bred, you know, and put their genes in the bosoms of those women.
Mm-hmm.
And so they passed down their genes only through the bloodstreams of the Yad. Go here, this other page. Through the Yadas and the Yadava, or the Yehudas,
mm-hmm.
or Jews. For that they had to breed with the daughters of men, leaving their seed in the wombs of these daughters. The closer people were tied genetically to the Yadu and Yadava, the easier it was to get a correct genetic match for producing a fetus capable of hosting a true son of the unbegotten.
Hmm.
Any of the other races could produce saints, but not saviors like Jesus and Krishna. For that reason, Lord Krishna and Jesus were related by blood ties. Krishna was a Yadu Kudu, Jesus was a Yehudi Koresh. So could it be that the Hebrew and Hindu gods, all of them, entering mankind's bloodstream through Japhet, the son of Noah, were really gods?
Hmm.
It seems that they were. We whose religions descend from Noah's times, worshipping the same deities, accuse one another of being wrong and that we are right.
Hmm.
But we are all brothers. Let's face it. What amazes me is that the Christiani, who were the people of Noah, and now the Christians, have never left the world scene. Before researching this information, I wondered why the Jews have always said they are the chosen people. That is because they, the Yadavas and the Yadus, were the only ones chosen by God to bring redemption to the world.
And
over the centuries, the Jews came to forget that they also shared that honor with the Indian Japheti, Yadus, and Yadavas. In ancient times, these tribes were said to possess great mystical knowledge. I've read a lot about them in the, in Hindu mythology.
Sure, yeah.
They were said to possess great mystical knowledge more than any other peoples on earth. It may be true that those who were chosen for the priesthood had to perform some kind of test to prove that they descended from the divine beings called Nephilim.
Mm.
And this is mentioned in the Bible. In Hebrews 7:3, we read a description of the mysterious figure called Melchizedek.
Yeah, Melchizedek, yeah.
Yeah, whom I claim was Malika Sadaka, Lord Krishna,
mm-hmm.
the incarnation of Vishnu.
Hmm.
And this is what the Bible says about this. Without father, without mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like unto the Son of God, abideth a priest continually. The Bible said clearly that the Nephilim were divine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that some people might regard such speculations as these as fantasy.
Mm.
But, you know, after my research, I'm taking these Hindus, the Jewish and Hindu scriptures, seriously now. I am actually convinced.
Hmm. So there is, as you say here, there is a a parallel between the Bible and the Hindu scriptures. Let me ask you a little bit about the Hindu scriptures. Can you read Sanskrit yourself, or do you rely on other people's?
I have studied. I know thousands of words, but I can't speak it.
Okay. Yeah.
But I do know thousands of words. And I never take a word seriously unless it relates to something in our Bible or something like this. I always say, if it has a name, it must have the game.
Okay.
Or if it has the game, it must have the name. I will not accept it if it doesn't directly relate.
Okay. So is that kind of a main theme that you follow, that you're looking for correlations between names?
I will never choose a word in these. I like linguistics.
Yeah.
But I'll never use a word unless it has a direct relationship to something that I'm after.
Okay.
But if it doesn't, I toss it in the wastebasket.
Hmm.
Now, for instance, let's talk about the word for soul in Sanskrit. We call it Atman, but there's another word. The Sanskrit Kabbalistic word for soul is called Purusa.
Purusa?
Yeah, Purusa, P-U-R-U-S-A.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning the soul and original source of the universe, identified as Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, and Durga.
Mm-hmm.
That's the original source, and that's called a Purusa. Now, in Christianity, 2 Peter 1:15, the spirituality, rebirth, and coming of Christ is called Parousia.
Hmm.
In Hinduism, Vishnu reincarnated as God Krishna as Parousia.
Hmm.
Also, that's according to the Hindu Artha Veda.
Okay, interesting.
Saint Paul himself. Preached or believed that Christ was in the incarnation of Lord Krishna, and he said so.
Really?
In the book of Hebrews, 6:26. Mm-hmm. And I hear 7:1, 7:16, 7:11, 7:17.
Mm-hmm.
Because he called him Melchizedek, the teacher of Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, another name of Krishna was Malika Sadaka, or King Sadaka. Sadaka, and even the Hebrew Sadak and Sadak, the Hebrew Sadak and Sadak meant an adept, a magician, one possessed of magical powers.
Hmm.
Now, Jesus Christ was called Yeshua, Yesu, Isa, and so forth, several names of both Shiva and Krishna.
Hmm.
Now, Krishna belonged, as I said, to the holy Kudus priestly sect, and Jesus was also named after his ancestor, King David Koresh, and in Sanskrit, David means knowledge of Shiva, and Koresh was the name of the priestly ruling house of David.
Hmm.
And so I started out as an agnostic.
Yeah.
And ended up as a believer that they are the chosen people of God, but they all have to descend from Japheth, the son of Noah. No other people on earth can be gods except those.
Hmm. Interesting.
Okay.
You know, one thing that comes to mind, and this is a passage that I read in one of your articles called The Fabled Sunken Hindu Island Trikuta, The Real Atlantis. And in this article you wrote, Christians deceive themselves into thinking that most biblical history took place in Israel and not in Central Asia, where it really took place. And it continues to say, so do Hindus tend to forget that many of their most important deities and religious stories are imports from Siberia. So there is even a more ancient connection here that goes back to Siberia.
Nearly all of the history, religious history especially, of mankind goes back to the Altai in Siberia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've heard of our biblical Hebrew, haven't you?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, they are both mentioned in the Hindu religious books. Now Hebrew, Hebrew had two sons, because evidently the people came out of the Altai down in either there or someplace there, and this big mountain Meru, and they started to live around this mountain, and the mountain started becoming overpopulated.
Mm-hmm.
So they decided to distribute the people all around the world. His sons, Peleg and little brother Joktan, they distributed people around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now in India, Heber is not called a Peleg. He's called Kubera, or he's called Kibera.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Except the Hindus don't mention as Peleg as his son. They mention Palaka or Palaga
mm-hmm.
as another name of Kubera, and then Joktan, which they call Yakshan, is not a specific person, it is a group of people.
Hmm.
And so they distribute these people around the world, and according to the Ramayana, it took Kubera 10,000 years to spread the people around the world.
So
and the reason...
Continue, please.
But go ahead.
I was going to ask you a little bit about the timeline, as it were, because that's always interesting. If we take, I don't know, the Bible by word, there have been calculations there, of course, that this goes back, about 6,000 years, something like that. But when you correlate this with Hindu scriptures and so forth, do we have to back up this, many more years? How many thousands of years do we have to go back here?
Well, I really don't know that very well, but I would say that all this perhaps happened around 6,000 B.C.
Okay, yeah.
And they distributed these people around the world, and another thing that was so very interesting, mankind, was supposed to have fallen apart about that time. And the Hindu scriptures, they tell almost the exact story about Ham and Shem and Japheth
mm-hmm.
as we do. Except, what happened after the flood, Noah, got drunk on some wine that he made.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And so Ham found him naked.
Yeah, yeah.
And called the brothers in, and they laughed about it. And they tell the same story in the Hindu scriptures, but it differs a little bit. They say that Ham, he performed sodomy on his father.
Oops. Okay.
On Noah. Well, Noah was drunk. And so Noah got angry about it when he found out about it. And he said to Shem after that, or Ham, that, he laughed at him, so his descendants will be called people of laughter. This is kind of funny, because we have the Hohokams, and they call the Heheyas, and other tribes by that name all around the world.
Really? Yeah. Interesting story.
Yeah, because we have the Hohokams, out here in the Southwest.
Okay.
and so Hoho, happy, and calm, that's Ham.
Okay.
I find the old Bible all over the world, and also because their scriptures are a lot like ours.
So
they all descend.
What I was going to ask was, is all of this also, you think, related to, there's much talk about the lost tribes of Israel and all of this. Is this a connection here, some kind here?
No, there were never any lost tribes of Israel. Never.
Oh, okay.
After Nebuchadnezzar, he took them off to the to Central Asia.
Mm-hmm.
He took them to Afghanistan and Pakistan and those places. But they already knew where they came from, and they go back to Jerusalem every year and have big celebrations. So they never got lost.
Okay.
I don't know why they call them lost tribes. I used to think that myself.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's a theme that's running, through a lot of research that you read about, and you come across it a lot of places. So I just wanted to ask you about it. One other thing, going back to this, the story of Noah and the flood and the ark and so forth. The flood, do you think that this was a worldwide event that happened all across the globe, or do you think that this was regional to the area around Middle East, or what's your take on that?
Well, I think perhaps that the earth wobbled on its axis some way, and it sort of sloshed the water around, like the water in a bucket.
Mm-hmm.
But the flood definitely took place in Altai. And you can see pictures of Altai today and see, you know, what left, like a wave, you know, on the ground.
Where is Altai more specifically? I don't know where this is.
Well, the Altai is in Siberia.
Okay.
And that's where the Mayans are from. In fact, there are even today in the Altai, there are Mayans still.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is an area that I would love to talk more about later, because I'm fascinated about that connection. But before we go there, maybe we could return a little bit more and talk about, I guess I'm more after the roots, I guess, to all of this and to the entire theme or thesis that you're talking about here. We talked about the Nephilim, of course, that these are kind of like the root race coming from some external place. And do you think that the humankind, the human race, were a mix then between another people and the Nephilim, or were the human race on Earth before the Nephilim came here?
Well, the human race was on Earth before then, and I have a tendency to believe perhaps they were the Cro-Magnon.
Oh, really? Oh, fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Because, you know, the Cro-Magnon looked exactly the way Homo sapiens sapiens does today.
Sure.
I can't even tell the difference myself.
maybe
I haven't seen any Cro-Magnons, but...
Maybe there are still a few ones around, I guess.
Yeah, but I've seen pictures of drawings of them. They look just like us, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, were there a difference in what intelligence after this mix occurred, do you think?
Well, I tell you, I have a few theories about that, but I don't want to talk too much about it because I want to be politically correct.
Okay. Okay.
But I have my own theories about that. But the Bible says that they were attractive, you know, to the Nephilim.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you see a woman and she's attractive to you, you know, you want to do what comes naturally.
Sure.
And so they definitely liked these women.
Mm.
But morally, they were falling apart. See, they started out, those Hyperboreans were able to even live 1,000 years. But they started doing all kinds of things, and so little by little,
yeah. You
know, they degenerated, and then you can imagine how they were in those days if Ham committed sodomy on his own father.
Sheesh, yeah.
And he was supposed to be one of the good guys.
Okay.
Because of the Hindu story about Ham says that he was a good warrior and he was noble and he was virtuous.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got his father, and his father was supposed to be to meditate. Was meditating on the gods all the time while he was drunk,
mm-hmm.
And he ended up being an old wino himself.
Oh my, what a story! Yeah. Yeah.
Noah was no angel himself.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, if we are to return a little bit more to the, I guess you talked earlier about the redemption aspect of all of this, that there have been, so-called saviors throughout our history that has been, you know, I don't know if we should call it incarnating or you know, whatever, but they have come to this planet either from some other place or through natural means, whatever.
Where the other planet was. It's just called the Aspen, the Horus constellation.
Okay.
The Aspen, I don't know anything about astronomy. Is there a Horus constellation or not?
I'm not sure, actually. I never... Horus constellation? Not as far as I know. It might be the Egyptian name for it, but today it has some other name in our modern, you know, constellation chart. I'm not sure, actually, but... Well, this name that you mentioned, is this something that you picked up from Hindu scriptures, Vedas, something like that?
What I found out about from the Hindu scriptures is that all the gods that are gods, and this, I mean the principal ones like Krishna and Vishnu and Shiva and all those,
mm.
and ours is Jupiter, Apollo,
yeah,
all of those.
These are the Greek...
stem from Japheth.
Yeah.
But the other tribes, see, they can't produce messiahs. And so I wonder about that a lot. And perhaps to produce a person like that, it would take a certain type of energy or something that perhaps burn up a person who didn't have the energy of that person, you know.
So it might have something to do with the DNA maybe, the physiological
DNA
aspect?
DNA or some energy, you know, to produce a messiah, it would take a different type of energy, I should think.
Huh, that's interesting. And one thing that always comes to mind, you know, to my mind when we're talking about these saviors and the redemption aspect of it, why do humanity need this, so to speak? What is it about this event? You know, we could take this the theme about Jesus, of course, but why must this take place? I mean, this is a sacrifice, I guess, to some extent.
Well, that's what I don't understand. You know, Quetzalcoatl.
Yeah.
Now Quetzalcoatl, I know he existed because I read the legends about him, and he said that he came from Wapalkali, and he came from Tlapalan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those are places in India, and you can find those places on the map today.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Except, you know, that they had their way of speaking. See, he called it Wapalkali. That was one of his homes that he came from.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in Nahua, you can't pronounce. I used to speak that a little bit quite well. In fact, but I've forgotten most of it.
Okay.
But Wapalkali, they couldn't speak the B or the V. And so they had. So that was had to be Bhopal.
Mm-hmm.
Bhopal and then Bhopalkala. Now, Kali means house in Nahua, but Kala means house in Sanskrit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So he said he came from Wapalkali. Well, that means he Bhopalkali. And see, Bhopal, it is right in the center of India. I have pictures of it on the map.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one that he said that he came from was, I should know that. That was, Pabiputra was a town. I'm getting so nervous, I'm forgetting the name of the place.
No problem.
And let me see if I've got that here.
Sure, no problem.
And Quetzalcoatl, you know, he went there, and it's an interesting story. I can tell you the story of Quetzalcoatl if you want to know about it.
Yeah, definitely. Would love to hear about that. This ties, you know, very nicely into the whole, you know, Mayan theme that I would love to get into, because this is a fascinating story, definitely.
Yeah, well, Quetzalcoatl was our Dionysus.
Dionysus?
Yeah, Dionysus.
Okay.
And he was called in India Dios Nahusha.
Hmm.
And a little bit like our Noah. And according to the Toltec legends, he was from Tlapalan, as I said, in Wapalkali.
Mm-hmm.
And those places are still located on a map of India. Now, Tlapalan was Tala. Tala meant the other upper world in Sanskrit,
okay,
or the eastern hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
Tala, or eastern hemisphere. And it was Pala or Palan, which is today's state of Bihar, so-called of its many monasteries. And its capital, long ago, was Pabiputra, site of the Third Buddhist Conference.
Okay.
Pala or Palan means land of protectors. And Pabiputra later sank under the water, and today that city is called Patna.
Okay.
So Wapalkali was really Bhopalkala, the home of Bhopal.
Mm-hmm.
Now Dios Nahusha or Dionysus, he was in those days. The gods were a lot like humans. You know, they didn't have to be virtuous. You know, the way we have our gods have to be today. And so he was very popular with the gods.
Mm-hmm.
And so the gods decided that they would elect Dios Nahusha or Dionysus to the position of king of the gods.
Mm.
Now, Dios Nahusha at first refused because he said he was enslaved to loose women and liquor.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I feel that I should not be called a god because every time I see a skirt, he says, my eyes open up. And he said, and he says, and I love a good drink now and then. But the gods insisted anyway.
Yeah.
So Dionysus said, okay, if you insist, I'll become king of the gods.
Hmm.
So he became king, but true to his character, Nahusha raped God Indra's wife and the wife of the philosopher Agastya.
Okay.
Now, Agastya really got angry, and so he banished him to Patala, turning him into a naga.
Hmm.
You know, so naga's a snake.
Snake, serpent, yeah, of course.
Yeah, but he wasn't really a snake. It was just that's the way the nagas dressed. You know, they were Phoenician people. You know, they're commercial people, and their ships were made to look a lot like snakes.
Okay.
And so he was banished to Patala or Mesoamerica.
Okay, and this is a connection. Is this where the Phoenicians came from then?
Well, the Phoenicians, actually, originally, they came from northern India, and then they moved up in to what is now Bulgaria and what's the other place? Anatolia, you know, Turkey.
Turkey, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and Greece, but for some strange reason, later on, the Greeks broke away from the Turks.
Hmm.
And in fact, everybody says that I talk to, you know, I correspond with people in Turkey and everything, and they say that the Greeks robbed their civilization from them.
Hmm.
And in fact, Flavius Josephus, you know, who wrote the history of the Jews?
Yeah.
Oh, he got really angry when the Greeks wanted to translate what they call the Septuagint, you know.
The Septuagint,
Translate the old Bible into Greek. And he says, now then, they'll be saying that they created us.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. He didn't like the Greeks at all.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, and again, that's another area that I'd love to talk more about, you know, a little bit later, maybe in the next segment, even the Anatolians, yeah. Because I guess there's, you know, a huge.
Shall I finish the story about Quetzalcoatl now?
Yeah, definitely. Let's finish off with that. That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, you see, he went into Mexico, and he went to what is now the ruins of Tula Hidalgo. I've been there before, and he taught the Mexicans the art of civilization,
mm-hmm.
And I don't need to tell you that he taught them the art of making liquor also. he certainly did.
Mm-hmm.
And he tried to force them. See, Tula has an interesting name because, see, that's a place in Russia.
Tula, okay, yeah.
It can either be Tula, Russia, or it could be Tura, or Anatolia, you know.
Isn't that a place in Ireland also, Tula? Maybe I'm thinking of.
Well, Tara, I'll bet that probably was named after that.
You know?
Because see, those people went around the whole world.
Yeah. Okay.
So he taught them how to make liquor. He tried to get them to stop sacrificing. So he said, "No." He says, "If you'll stop sacrificing," he says, "I will sacrifice myself for mankind, so they'll never have to do that again." And so he lashed himself to a cross. We call it a St. Andrew's cross.
Mm-hmm.
Burned himself alive.
Okay.
And then he came back. Then he came back to life. But the other Toltec priests, they weren't satisfied with that. They wanted to go back to the human sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
So one night they talked him into a nice big pitcher of pulque. Pulque is a Mexican beer that they are Mexican wine that they make out of the maguey or century plant.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. It gives you the best drunk in the world.
Okay.
And so he got drunk on it.
Yeah.
And then after he got drunk, true to his nature, he raped either his daughter or his sister, according to the myths.
Okay.
So in retaliation, they exiled him from Mexico on a raft of snakes, and he returned to his native Tlapala. That's the story of Quetzalcoatl.
That's the story of Quetzalcoatl. Okay, you know, in a way, I thought that this was attributed to, you know, maybe not the savior of the Mexicans or the Mayans or Aztecs or Toltecs, as you say, but I mean, wasn't he one who brought kind of enlightenment and you know, a new era to the region and so forth?
Well, I'll tell you, he brought the kind of enlightenment that Noah did, you know. Noah got drunk, you know, and started contemplating the gods.
Mm-hmm.
And while he was drunk as a skunk, and that was Noah was no angel himself, you know. He was an old wino.
Okay.
And so Quetzalcoatl was no better, you know. And the word Quetzalcoatl really has an interesting name.
Mm.
Ket is the ancient Sanskrit word for a leader.
Okay.
Of mankind, and Chao is what they call this, you've heard of the tree shul, or the shawl, is the Sanskrit name for a scepter, a king's scepter.
Okay.
So that part of it is Sanskrit. Now, Quetzalcoatl means twin. It even means a twin today over in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a good pal in Mexico, see, because twins are like one. You know, a snake is one body.
Mm-hmm.
And so in Mexico, if you get a real good friend or something, then you call him a cuate.
Okay.
You know, like a snake.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because that they're twins.
Hmm.
And so definitely, Quetzalcoatl then was twins with this other fellow, and he was I'll get his name in a second.
Mm.
His twin brother was sacrificed too.
Okay.
On the cross, he had to go to the underworld to get sacrificed, but he was burned on the cross too.
Hmm. So this.
I'll get his name in a second. It's terrible to be old, you know.
It's no problem. What? If we spell out the entire name, Quetzalcoatl, but in the Sanskrit version, what do we get then? Scepter and twin I got at the end, but what were the first ones again?
See that just a little bit, you know.
Sure. Okay.
You know, like I say, my ears, you know, are they're not the way they used to be.
Okay, yeah, do you want me to repeat that again?
Yeah, please.
Okay, yeah, so if we take the name Quetzalcoatl, but we take the Sanskrit version of it, what do we get, what does it mean then? Because I got scepter and twin at the end, but what were the first two words you said?
Well, I'm not so sure that there is an equivalent term
okay.
for Coatl in Sanskrit.
Hmm.
But there definitely is. Trying to think of something similar to that. I'll tell you this though.
Mm-hmm.
The word Azteca means in Sanskrit, a very religious person dedicated to religion.
Ah, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating.
I would say this Quetzal. That part, the Quetzal is Sanskrit, but I'd say that other word Coatl.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that it's perhaps a native Nahuatl or Toltec words, and you know the word Nahuatl or Nahua is just a Sanskrit word for sailor.
Hmm. Really?
Yeah. So and also there these Aztecs they also had the leadership. See the Phoenicians they call themselves this if they were the gentility or the aristocracy,
mm-hmm.
then they call themselves Kati, and that's all over the world, you know. And if they were just common people, they were Ka.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is the same way in the Mexican language. If you were Aztec gentility,
mm-hmm.
then you were Aztec Kat.
Okay.
And if you're just a common, ordinary person, you were an Aztec Ka.
Hmm.
And the same is true in the other language. Now take the Zapotec language. Okay. The Zapotecs are from southern Mexico,
mm-hmm.
and Zapota in Sanskrit means people who have ships. and if you were a Zapotec king, you would be called Zapotecac.
Okay.
If you're just ordinary person, you'd be Zapoteca.
Hmm.
The same is true in the Totonac.
Okay.
In fact, I met a Totonac man when I was in Mexico City this February. If you were they were the biblical Dodonas.
Yeah.
And so the kings were called Totonacat, and the average person was Totonaca. And see, that was the original name the Phoenicians gave themselves. The Phoenicians did not go around calling themselves Phoenicians.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard that too. That there was named afterwards.
It was that word Ka and Kati, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, so this is fascinating, you know, because you find these, as you said, the similarities between, you know, the words and so forth. But all of this, do you think that all of this then imply that there was kind of a first language, a global language, then that everybody spoke the same?
Well, I wonder about that a lot. I do know for sure that Turkic had to be a global language because I wanted to go to Turkey about a couple of years ago, but see, I'm married to a woman that I don't live with.
Okay.
And she's hard to get along with.
I
was widowed a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't get along together, this woman and I. We just travel together.
Okay.
And so she went up to, I refused to go to Turkey with her.
Hmm.
And then I bought some books on Turkic. And I'll tell you, it looks like every word in the world of all the languages in Turkic. And the same way, I see that with Sanskrit a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So it had to be a cross between the two of them, or both of them,
mm-hmm.
because even here in the United States, you know, we have you've heard of the Adirondack Mountains?
No, I haven't, no.
Well, there's some mountains up northeastern United States. Well, Adiron, or Adrian,
mm-hmm.
is a province in Turkey.
Okay.
Dak is the Turkic word for mountain. And everybody in the world, I seem to think, either has a Turkic name or a Hindu name. I myself have a Hindu name.
Okay.
My name is Matlock. It was really Mahatlock. It means the very great universe.
Really?
and the English names, Murray, Logan.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was giving a speech in Mexico this last April. I say, you guys don't realize it, but none of you really has a real Spanish name, and neither do I. All of our names descend from Turkic.
Mm.
The same way with you as a Swedish person. I'm trying to think of the name of Sweden in Sanskrit, but I've forgotten it now.
Okay. Fascinating stuff. You know, one thing I do want to continue talking about with you in the next segment is more about these, you know, Anatolians and the connection more, I guess, between India and Mexico and as you say, Turkey now, of course, obviously, and also tying in all of this with the Mayans. I know there's, you know, some fascinating stories there, and even, I guess, we could talk a little bit more even about the Mayan calendar, maybe, if there's some Hindu origin there.
And about that. Mm-hmm, a lot to say.
Yeah, very interesting. But you know, before we finish off this first segment, as we said at the beginning, you have a new book coming out called Reaching for God, A Valid Science, and you have a number of other books out there too. But tell us about the books you have, and also how people can purchase them. I guess they are through Amazon maybe, or something like that.
Yeah, I actually told a person of this on the internet. I was really inspired to write this book. And I actually am convinced that it will put atheism out of business.
Hmm.
And they beam a lot of the churches.
Mm-hmm.
There is some big truths to this. And I also wrote a little about this. If we have time now, I can read this to you.
Sure.
Okay, I titled this. This is just a little bit of something that I took out of the book, because the book contains a lot more about this. But, you know, as we have been told in legends, that at one time mankind knew that he was really his soul, not his soul, but his spirit. He was really the spirit, just a spirit. He was not a material person, but he inhabited a body the same we would drive a car.
Hmm.
And when man knew and realized that he was not that body, he could live as long as he wanted to. Because the Hyperboreans, they could not even die unless they committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And usually when they got to 1,000 years old, as we are told by the Greeks, that when they got tired of 1,000 years old or whatever, they would just jump off a mountain and kill themselves when they got tired of living.
Okay.
As long as they realized that that they were the drivers of that body and not the body,
mm-hmm.
Well, they were okay. And this really made a lot of sense to me, because I have lived among primitive peoples in Mexico and Latin America.
Mm-hmm.
It's not too long. It's 2.5 pages. It says, I entitled it, The Fast Way to Recover Our True Selves. And this is just something I took out of this book.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyone who has ever lived with or in close proximity to unlettered social groups convinced that they are totally physical beings sooner or later notices that they generally suffer from a number of chronic learning and social problems. Their idea of labor centers around almost entirely around their arms, legs, and backs. They even judge mental effort in the same way. Since they feel they have to be grasping, manipulating, and carrying physical objects, it frustrates and confuses them to understand how the mind can perform work in what seems to be a passive activity.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking that the physical mind, not having arms, legs, or a back, requires much more scrunch than their regular bodies, the men from such unprivileged groups tend to think that mental labor depletes male sexual powers. They regard mm-hmm. intellectuals as sissies. When I was a teacher, my family and I often spent our summers in a little hotel in Acapulco, Mexico. The hotel owner was an admitted macho who frowned on more than basic mental effort. During the afternoons, when it was too hot to go to the beach or to walk around town, my family and I would sit on the hotel veranda reading or playing games.
Mm.
I used the time to review my mathematics. One day the hotel owner went out to the veranda and saw me working math problems. Thinking he could heat up my wife's sexual thermometer, he strutted almost like a peacock, bragging, "Well now, nobody can ever accuse me of studying and reading books." I answered, "And I believe you." Now naturally, I was indirectly insulting him, but he was not in the least offended. He thought I was complimenting him. Now when I was younger, Latin American women were not expected to do more than cook, maintain the household, and have children. Therefore, they suffered from extremely grave learning problems. I knew women who would get severe migraine attacks for performing the slightest mental effort. Now, she's in the other world now, and I hate that. I don't know whether she'd mind, but I was married to a wonderful, saintly little Mexican woman. And she died a little over 3 years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
She was like that. Because, see, these people did stoop labor all their lives. And she'd only had 2 years of school, and she thought also that to learn, you had to do somehow do something muscular, you know. And so she didn't get a very good education, but she was of normal intelligence. But I heard her telling a friend of hers before she died. She said, "I hope I die first because I don't know what I'll do if I have to write a check." Or something like that. And her friend, Micaela, who's a friend of ours, she says, "I feel the same way." She says, "I don't want to have to write a check or do anything that requires a lot of mental effort, and I'm afraid that if Fidel dies first, I'll have to do it." And so here we have these people, you know, convinced that the body and the mind are the same thing. Now I'm talking to Frederick, right?
Henrik.
Henrik.
Yeah.
Well, now you and I both know, because we're both educated, that you and I, we cannot even function unless we separate the mind and the body. We'll do this, and we consider the mind like the brain and the nervous system. I don't know whether you're that way, but I'm that way. I cannot think, even conceive, as my brain and nervous system as being really the same physical organ as the body. But our scientists say that it is, and so we have to go along with it to a certain extent.
Yeah, it depends on, I guess, right. if you're talking about the soul here, or, you know, the spirit.
No, the soul is another thing. All I'm going to talk today is about this thing about mental effort. And know that the soul and the spirit are different.
Sure.
Now, so not being able to even conceive that mental labor is not like physical labor, such people can endure undesirable physical and emotional conditions that would wear out you and me. You can see that with our agricultural workers here in the United States, from Mexico and Central America. They can work themselves to death and even be happy doing it because they don't know any other way. They think that everything is the body. And they even suffer less while working than someone who classifies mental and bodily effort as separate modes of labor, even finding a degree of satisfaction and happiness in lifestyles repugnant to the middle classes here in the United States. And this is the main reason why farmers and employers here in the United States who require stoop labor, or people willing to work under harsh and undesirable working conditions for low wages, are thrilled with the cheap slave labor that comes in from third world countries. Because, see, they don't know that there's another anything else with them except the body, you know.
Okay.
Now, people, having said this, I don't want to convey the impression that such people as these are incapable of progress. They often make excellent businessmen. However, they are generally more demanding with and cruel to their employees than those employers making a distinction between mind and body, not because they're evil, but only because of their ignorance. They don't know any other way. They demand of others mainly what they demand of themselves. And I've told you about, in ancient times, how humans regarded their spirit minds as their true selves and their bodies only as transports or mediums through which the spirit minds use their physical bodies to create, enjoy themselves, and perform labor. Now, that was mankind's state in Eden. As long as he remained in that mental state, he could live for hundreds of years and avoid most suffering. Now, most middle-class people today from advanced countries, at least, like I was telling you, make a distinction between the physical body and the spirit mind by regarding the spirit mind as a subsidiary of the body. It's a midpoint. And as long as we can keep that mindset, though erroneous, we can progress, you know, a little more than these other workers do out in the fields. Now, as we all know, we can choose, see, all this is mine, you know. As we all know, we can choose to regard ourselves as purely physical, sensual beings, or we can regard ourselves as occupying bodies that both physically, mind, are physically mind and physically skin, blood, and bones, but in a different way, you know. So everything depends on how we condition our minds.
Okay.
We choose the animal sentence, the animal senses. We train our minds to see ourselves as workhorses and slaves. If we choose the mind-body alternative, we get that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what I ask. Since all of this is a matter of education,
mm-hmm.
why don't we again condition ourselves to be spirit minds and regard our bodies as transports of mm-hmm. spirit minds?
Mm-hmm.
By doing that, we can return to the state of Eden, perhaps as rapidly as in two or three generations. So I think we ought to give it a try. Thinking ourselves as part of the body hasn't helped us too much, I don't think.
I would tend to lean towards the aspect of that this actually is another external manipulation that has been going on to actually create these, then, as you say, these kind of worker bees, as it were, of society.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think that there are people around who, for their own personal reasons and gains and greed and whatnot, would like to see these souls that the, you know, other people working for them and so forth. I mean, this seems to be a common thread through human history, you know.
Well, I'll tell you, these people, they can do quite well in this country, but they're so cruel to their own people. The Mexicans, see, I live among Mexicans almost 100%, and I've lived with them for about 60 years, you might say I have dual loyalties, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I find the horrible things that happen to them, you know. They don't want to work for their own kind. They're afraid of their own kind. They want to work for an American or even a Chinese or something like that. They don't want to work for a Mexican.
Do you think that is true across the board, so to speak?
I have never, ever heard a Mexican say anything good about having one of his own kind as an employer.
Okay.
Ever.
Okay.
But they like to work for Americans. Americans, you know, are sort of an easygoing people anyway.
Okay.
Mm. And Americans, I think, even though I am one, you know, I'm bragging a little bit, I guess. But I think the Americans are a little bit humanitarian.
Okay.
And they love to work for Americans. And one of my ex-students one time, he came to see me one day over here, and he says, you know, Mr. Matlock, he says, when you were always pushing me to and telling me that I was a wooden head when I was in school, and telling me to do something about myself and stop acting, you know, like I was just a wooden head. He says, you know, I got to thinking about that. And he says, I already got serious about my life. And he says, I went to work for a wonderful American employer, a woman.
Mm.
Guess what? He says, she has even given us our own house free of charge. And he says, I'm really glad I listened to you a little bit. He says, and changed a bit.
Okay.
And they have nothing good to say about their own kind, and they don't have too much good really to say about Chinese either, but they love to work for Filipinos, and they love to work for Americans.
All right. Take it or leave it. I'm very, you know, interesting to hear that perspective. I haven't heard that, before. Actually, I know that there, at current time, that there is a lot of problems, I guess, in northern America of immigration problem allegedly. And
well, it's really getting serious now.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel sorry for these people. I love them. I'm the kind of person who wants things done legally.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them, I says, if you guys would do things legally, coming to this country legally, and got permission, you could probably even throw us out and we'd not say anything.
I see at the moment, I see all of this as a kind of a precursor to the merger of the entire American continent, creating the American Union, as it were. I don't know if you see that or not.
Well, I tell you, I don't know what to say about this too much, but I would hate to see this country go their way culturally, because, you know, they have a great deal of social and economic problems.
Sure.
And
sure.
Which we will inherit.
Mm-hmm.
They take over this way.
Mm-hmm.
because they really suffer. I'm around them a lot, and but they don't feel the suffering the way you and I would because of our enlightened middle class attitude that we have about life. See, they see it just physically. I know this Mexican woman. Her children were quite intelligent, but she was totally convinced that her brain is a muscle. You know, like the legs and the arms.
Yeah, sure.
And she will try to memorize something, and suddenly she will come down with severe migraine attacks. And well, my wife was the same way a little bit. She was of normal intelligence. She was an excellent wife. I want to add. But she thought that, and she, as I said, she and Michaela would get together and talk about how terrible it would be if we would, Fidel and I would die first, and they'd have to write checks and things like that.
Okay, anyway, to kind of round things up with this first segment here, this is what you read here and what you're speculating about here. This is something that is part, I guess, of your new book.
Well, I say this. See, my book centers around those things, but not just about those two things.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
But if we can convince ourselves that we have a mind and a body, and they're both physical, but they're different, you know, as we do, I know. Because, you and I wouldn't be able to get any place if we thought we were just all bodies.
Yeah.
And if we can convince ourselves, as they do, that they're all bodies, and you and I can convince ourselves that we have a mind and body, but each physical in so way, we might as well go ahead and go the rest of the way and brainwash ourselves and convince ourselves completely that our minds or our spirits are different from the bodies. Because, you know, even in religion, all religions, not just Christianity, they all teach that the body is dead meat when it's born. So if we can convince ourselves, well, the Buddhist Book of the Dead says it, all we have to do is convince ourselves of it. The Buddhists say something over and over enough, convince yourself, for you it will become a law of the universe. So I say this, well, as long as we're getting educated, let's go ahead and brainwash ourselves to think that our minds are just the spirits. We certainly can't lose anything by doing it.
Yeah, and you say that would lead us to a better place then, I guess?
Well, I say this.
Yeah.
And in fact, this book, I really put my heart into it. And I actually think that if people would, we could get rid of a lot of churches, we could get rid of gurus, I can't stand a guru anyway, and get rid of gurus and churches, maybe a lot of churches, and people would become their own teachers.
I certainly agree with that. So again, here your book is called Reaching for God, a Valid Science. Is it available through Amazon, or where can people find a copy of this?
This August, it's going to be out in about 3 or 4 more weeks. And it'll be out. And I actually am convinced that if people would take that just a little bit seriously, you know, they don't have to believe what I say or anything, but just give me an audience on that, we might be able to transform humanity with all these wars and everything. Because I've been among these people who think they're all bodies, and you just don't know how much they suffer. They don't seem to know they're suffering the way you and I do over here in L.A. area. They'll work in these terrible plastic factories, you know, with those terrible odors that would kill you and me. And in fact, I'd go in to see them sometimes on business, and I would have to put my hand over my nose. But they were working 8 hours a day and not thinking too much about it the way you and I would.
Well, sure. I mean, you become conditioned, and eventually you're, in a way, you acclimatize yourself to the situation that you're in, and in some instances that seems to be a feature of human, the human being, as it were. I don't know, but
I go to mass. I'm a Catholic, you know, like I attended last night. In every mass, the priest talks about the difference between the body and the mind. Like last night, he says, "You want to look for God?" He says, "You'll not find God in the mountains. You're not going to find it out on the desert." He says, "You won't find it any place. You'll only find God within yourself."
Yeah, I agree.
He says that you're not going to find God in any other place except yourself.
Yeah.
Well, then I'm going to have, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to have to train my mind to think another way. because right now, you know, I'm 50% tied to my body, just because I admit, you know, that the brain and the nervous system are a different type of physical organ than the regular body.
Sounds like a good idea to me, Matt. Like and Gene, I mean, you know, we're gonna have to take a little break now to finish off this segment, but we are going to continue talking in the next segment more about the Anatolians and trying its back a little bit more to the Mayans and the Mayan calendar. But I want to thank you so much for this segment, and we will take a short break and continue soon. Okay. If you want to hear the excellent continuation of our interview with Gene Matlock, head on over to our subscriber archive at redicecreations.com and tune in. If you're not a subscriber and want to continue listening, just click on subscribe from our front page or in our radio archive. And from there you can read more about how to sign up and get access to our growing archive of radio programs. Thanks to producer Fredrik Palmgren, and thanks to you for tuning in to the program. We will be back on Thursday with our regular guest, Michael Tesarion. Until then, take good care. This is Henrik Palmgren. The website is redicecreations.com.